are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Thursday, March 10th, 2022. Follow on Twitter at ChickenXDinner. DM's always open for you. And subscribe to this podcast so you get it once the new episodes go live. We will talk to Richard Schutz, longtime casino executive and gaming consultant. I've been teasing this episode for a while, but we've had so many things that have happened over the last few weeks. Richard's interview was very evergreen. This is essentially story time. He used to work at the legendary Stardust in Las Vegas, and he has stories on stories on stories, but also plenty of thoughts about the sports betting space, where it was, where it is, where it's going, and all of the problems that continue to arise because these books are not making money. So Richard will join us later on in the show. I thought about this the other day, and it was a conversation I was having with a buddy of mine about Adam Schefter, who supposedly could be a media free agent relatively soon. And the convo we had, it was a long phone conversation about how much Adam Schefter is worth to the world's best bettors. And I was talking to this guy, and he said, you know how much money I would pay for Adam Schefter's information before he hit tweet and blasted it out? I said, well, how much? He said, you couldn't put a price on it. But if you think about the connections that Schefter has built and the network that he has established, the information he gets is as good as gold. And I'm not talking about, all right, the left guard might not play Sunday. You know, Quentin Nelson is out for the Colts. That's going to move the line a point, maybe, depending on who they play. But if you get the best of the best, like, for example, Russell Wilson is doubtful for Sunday's game, Broncos and Raiders, that line's going to move 5 points. I don't know how many times this year Schefter had information on that late Thursday afternoon, whether it was Dak Prescott with the ankle against Minnesota. There were a couple games where Kyler Murray was banged up on a Thursday. And then, you know, we knew. You could see the line move. I remember one game, Arizona was a 5-point favorite. Kyler Murray, the news came out about Kyler Murray on Thursday that he was not ready to go. And the line got down to Arizona -2, 2.5. And then by Sunday, Arizona's a 1-point dog. And people are like, well, let's wait and see what Schefter says. The market already knows that Kyler Murray's not going to play. But this buddy of mine was saying, look, if I can get that information before he sends it out, I would make hundreds of thousands of dollars on these NFL sides. And he doesn't bet a lot of sides in the NFL. He plays more totals. But just off the information, Aaron Rodgers has a fractured toe. If this bettor can get that information before it goes on Twitter, going to make a lot of money. And he says, look, if I can get down, if I can spread this around and just take a random NFL game where I get a golden tip from Adam Schefter, and I bet $100,000 on Team A, and I do that 10 times. If I can beat the closing line in the NFL with a starting quarterback or a number one wide receiver or a guy like Aaron Donald, I'm telling you, the cream of the crop. If I can get down on that information before the public does, I will win probably 7 out of 10 bets. So if you make 10 bets for $100,000, you win 7, you're up $700,000. Lose 3, $300,000. Plus the $30,000 on the VIG, you're up $370,000 on 10 amazing Adam Schefter tips. He says, I'd give the guy 30%, maybe more. Now, I don't know what Adam Schefter wants to do, and there are a lot of rumors being floated around. ESPN is going to pay him until he says no. The Action Network may be interested. Potentially a sports book could be interested. But I also don't think that Adam Schefter knows how much these lines move. Like, I'm sure he's well aware of the gambling space and he knows what point spreads and totals are. But if he didn't have a media job and he was still able to get the information without making it public, he could bet on his own. He wouldn't need to work for a pro bettor. And people are like, well, he won't get the information anymore. Well, yes, he will. If they say, hey, don't say anything, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, he could get it and he could bet it. I don't think Adam Schefter is going to be betting six figures on an NFL game, but if he got to work with the right group, the possibilities are endless for that guy. I'm telling you, that was the quote. Do you know how much fucking money I would pay for his information? Something to think about. Big news in the NFL earlier this week. Aaron Rodgers back to the Packers. 4 more years. Russell Wilson traded to the Broncos. And I was looking at the Superbook numbers after the Super Bowl, Rams and Bengals. The Packers were as high as 16-1. Broncos were as high as 30-1. And as I've talked about on this show, those were halfway numbers. Not mathematically halfway, but they were halfway between those quarterbacks staying. For Rodgers' example, Rodgers either staying in Green Bay or leaving. And with Denver, either they get a quarterback or they don't get a quarterback. Alan Berg from WinBet told me 3 weeks ago, if Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams leave, the Packers, hell, they could be 100-1 to win the Super Bowl because they're not going to with Jordan Love. But if they get Aaron Rodgers, they're sub 10-1. So what do the books do? They hang 16-1, 15-1, 14-1. Because there's no way in hell they're going to put the Packers at 50. That would be the true halfway number, give or take. They're not going to put Packers plus 50 because then people are going to come in and bet on the potential of them getting Aaron Rodgers. So what you do as a bookmaker is you drag that thing all the way down to 14, 15, 16-1. The pros aren't going to bet it because they have no idea if Rodgers is coming back or not. And then if the casual bettor wants to bet 15, 16-1 and Aaron Rodgers leaves, all of a sudden the house looks good because that bet they took at 15 is now 4 times or 5 times higher. So that's why they settle on those lower numbers. And Denver, the books, they didn't tell you, but they told you that they believed Denver was going to trade for a quarterback. Remember last offseason, before the Rodgers rumors ever started, the Denver Broncos were 70-1 to win the Super Bowl. Well, Superbook in Vegas is dealing 30-1 last month. John Murray told me everybody knew they were a sleeping giant and they only needed a quarterback. So when they pull it off and acquire Russell Wilson, you shorten the odds to 16-1 and then lower the price after you take some bets to 14-1. So the Packers now at the Superbook are 7-1 and the Broncos are 14-1. Denver has the 5th best odds to win the Super Bowl at most books. Buffalo, Kansas City, Green Bay, Los Angeles Rams, Denver Broncos. Then San Francisco, Dallas, Cincinnati, Baltimore, Tennessee, LA Chargers, Arizona. There's one more team that's interesting to me. And I'm telling you right now, because we talked about the Broncos. Remember, the Broncos were 28-1 or so 3 weeks ago. And I was giving you the future numbers. And I said, look, don't go big on this. But if there's one team, when you look at these odds, that's interesting to me, it's Denver because they need a quarterback. Remember, top 5 roster, bottom 5 quarterback room. We've discussed this. At that point, Denver's 25-28-1 to win the Super Bowl. And I said, if they get anybody, and I didn't know who it was. Nobody did. But you thought they would make a push for Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson. They get Wilson. And that 28-1 is now long gone. So Denver, I'm looking right now, PointsBet has 11-1, a lot of 12-1 in the market, and then a couple 14-1s. Actually, there are two teams that interest me. Number one is the Colts. Despite trading Carson Wentz, Indianapolis went from 30-1 to 25-1 at a couple books. And I'm going to guess here. I'm going to put on my investigator cap. If they're trading Carson Wentz, they got something in the works, right? I hear Jimmy Garoppolo, but that's not it. He doesn't make you better. Those guys are, they're a wash, Wentz and Garoppolo. If Deshaun Watson clears this mess that he's in, you tell me that Indianapolis with Deshaun Watson and Jonathan Taylor and that offensive line and those wide receivers, you tell me that team isn't better than they were last year, you're out of your mind. That is a very good roster. T.Y. Hilton, Zach Pascal, Michael Pittman, the big tight end, Mo Alie-Cox. You've got a couple running backs, Jonathan Taylor, Nyheim Hines, Marlon Mack. They are not going into this season with Sam Ehlinger. That is not going to happen. So if Indianapolis gets Deshaun Watson, question mark, where does the number go? You can get 33-1. That is the best price in the world right now at FoxBet. A couple 30-1s, a couple 28-1s, 25-1. That's pretty much the range on Indianapolis. But if they get Watson, it goes sub 20. It has to, because the pros will bet it right away, the books will drop it, and then the public will chase it. So that's another team that's very interesting. The only problem is that AFC is now loaded. Buffalo, Kansas City, Denver, Cincinnati, Tennessee, Los Angeles Chargers, New England Patriots, Indianapolis Colts. They still don't have a good path to the Super Bowl. But there's a team out there, I'm telling you. If they can trade for Deshaun Watson, they're in the NFC. All of a sudden, this team is for real. They have skill. They have speed. They have schematics, play calling, coaching, good defensive line, weapons on offense, and a shaky young quarterback. The Philadelphia Eagles. They are 45-1 at FoxBet, 45-1 at DraftKings. Most books are 40-1 right now, and that is under the impression that Jalen Hurts is the starting quarterback. And well, somebody the other day, well, they like Jalen Hurts. Well, of course they're going to say they like Jalen Hurts. Have you watched him? Those run-first quarterbacks just don't do it in a passing league. But you look at the weapons they've got, Devontae Smith, Jalen Reagor, Greg Ward, Arcega Whiteside, you've got running backs, Miles Sanders. You've got some players there. And a pretty good offensive line. Dallas Goedert, the tight end. Get a quarterback in there that can throw. I mean, Watson runs, but he's a better thrower than a runner. Hurts is a better runner than a thrower. The Eagles need an accurate quarterback that can get the ball to guys in space and make them go. They don't have that now. But if the Philadelphia Eagles can get a quarterback like Deshaun Watson, look out. And you talk about divisional markets and getting ahead of the market. Last year, I was all in on Dallas to win the NFC East, and they were minus 110, which looking back was one of the easiest bets you can make. If you bet right now at DraftKings, Philadelphia Eagles are 4-1 to win the division. What's that number if they get Deshaun Watson? Plus 175? Something like that. We talked about three horses from Uncle Kirk to win the Kentucky Derby, and this was actually a pretty funny story. I sent some bread out to the desert. My buddy Mo Pearson, if I need somebody to get down, get a ticket, he's my guy. Sent some cash out there. I go, Mo, here are the horses I want. Classic Causeway is 20-1. White Abario is 40-1. Simplification is 65-1. All of those horses were at those prices at Circa Sports. And I sent this out, I think, last Thursday to him. And he's like, yep, I'll be back from Dallas on Friday. I'll either bet him Friday or Saturday. I said, cool. Sounds good. So he gets there to Circa on Saturday and sends me a text. Hey, Simplification is down to 16-1. I said, what? I said, no, he's 65-1. Dog, he ain't 65-1 anymore. Turns out, Simplification won the Fountain of Youth. And somebody saw this horse run and decided to clobber it. So it went from 65-1 on Friday night, Saturday morning, to 16-1 after the Fountain of Youth. Mo says, well, I didn't bet it because you didn't get a good number. I'm like, wait a minute, I didn't do what? So I'm giving my guy some shit now. He got the other horses. We got 200 on Classic Causeway to win 4,000. 100 on White Abario to win 4,000. And nothing on Simplification. If this horse wins the Kentucky Derby, and I was salivating to get 65-1, and because of a logistical issue, we do not, I'm going to be very upset. I'm not mad at Mo. I just want to cry on the inside. And this horse, after one race, goes from 65-1 to 16-1. Talk about missing the move there, huh? I had a couple people at work. I work at Nesson out here in Boston, talking about Jason Tatum to win the MVP. And I caution all of you to avoid these pushes late in the season. Jason Tatum scored 54 against the Nets, 49 the other night. He is on fire. There's a reason the books are giving you 250-1, though. DraftKings actually moved him up. Somebody was like, well, wait, 250-1, that's a great bet. It's not, because he's not going to win the award. He's a very, very good player. But at this point in the game, this is what sportsbooks do. They will jack up people that aren't going to win to prices that are just exorbitant because they know that they're not winning. I mean, you look at the market now. It's a 1-2 punch. It's clear. Joel Embiid, minus 150 at a couple books. Nikola Jokic, plus 140, plus 150. That's probably it. That's the vote in my mind. And that's what the odds makers are telling you with these numbers. Giannis, 8-1. Ja Morant, anywhere from 16-28. DeMar DeRozan, he was 10-1 at some books. Now you could find him at 30 or 40-1. They're pushing everybody else up because they are willing to give it away. It's either Embiid or Jokic. So please don't burn $200, $400, $500 on a guy like Luka Doncic or Steph Curry or Jason Tatum, because it's just not going to happen. That's the way it works. The books will bump these up on purpose because the narrative lately is, oh my goodness, look at Boston and look at Jason Tatum. He's got 450-point games now. He's tied Larry Bird. None of that matters to the MVP because Tatum hasn't been doing this all season long. The domination has been from two players, Embiid and Jokic, and that's the reality. So avoid these late pushes from good players. The price tells you everything. Two more quick things before we get to Richard Schutz. I have to discuss this Calvin Ridley situation. News came out on Monday. Ian Rappaport, Falcons wide receiver Calvin Ridley has been suspended a year for gambling on NFL games during the season. A league investigation uncovered that Ridley's betting took place during a five-day period in late November when he was away from the team. Mike Garofolo added, Ridley placed parlay bets on NFL games using his cell phone, and Garofolo later reported, the NFL made it clear they'd be able to work with gambling partners to gather information on potential violators by players, team employees, and that's how Calvin Ridley was caught. My first reaction, how do you make these bets yourself? Are you that stupid? He signed up for an account with his name. First name, Calvin. Last name, Ridley. How, come on. Red flag number one. You can't sign up for an account and plan to bet on the NFL. And people are blaming the sports. Why did they let him sign up? He can bet on anything else. He just can't bet on the NFL. I couldn't believe he signed up for an account in his own name. Can't you just give somebody the money and have them make the bet for you? Twitter was on fire. And Ridley didn't help. At Calvin Ridley won. I bet $1,500 total. I don't have a gambling problem. I thought that was amazing. Put that on my tombstone. Roger Sherman. Calvin Ridley bet $1,500 and lost $10 million. Those are the worst odds in gambling history. At the Tyrone Palmer. We regret to inform you that due to his shameful gambling, Calvin Ridley has been suspended from the BetRivers 2022 regular season, sponsored by DraftKings. It's so true, because the league is in bed with the gambling. I mean, you can't watch a game without seeing an ad during a commercial break. The Superdome is the Caesars Superdome. Sportsbooks are going to start popping up in all of these arenas and stadiums. I get it. Look, Calvin Ridley should not be able to bet on the NFL. But it's very ironic how all of the gambling companies are in bed with the NFL. And the first guy, you know, with this new wave, Calvin Ridley, gets popped, and they're going to give him a full season. But ironically enough, the league doesn't know what to do with Stephen Ross in Miami, who allegedly was trying to get his head coach to throw games for $100,000 a game, and we haven't really heard a solution there. But if you want to bet $1,500 when you're not with your team and you're not getting inside information and you're throwing out 3, 5, 18 parlays, you are suspended for a year. Interesting. Last thing, let's fucking go Bryant. Beat the snot out of Wagner in the NAC title game. At one point, Bryant was up 34-6. We've been waiting for this moment for two full seasons. Bryant in the big dance. And I'm telling you all right now, whatever the total opens Sunday night, it will not be high enough. That's almost a promise. Now, unless they get a team like Virginia or Florida State, which odds are good they won't, if they get an average pace basketball team, or in a perfect world, we get Arizona and Bryant, that total opens 156. It's going to get knocked up to 162, 163. So whatever you can get on Sunday, I'm telling you right now, bet the over. And if you want to come back on the other side and go under, you're going to have a pretty nice middle. That's what I would forecast for that total. Whatever it is, it will rise. It will rise from the opener, and we're going to get down as much as we can on Sunday night. So glad to be joined by Richard Schutz here on Chicken Dinner. He's on Twitter at Schutz, Inc., S-C-H-U-E-T-Z-I-N-C. Richard is the owner of Schutz LLC. It's a gaming and regulation consulting entity, but he's been everywhere. He's worked in Vegas, Atlantic City, Reno, Tahoe, Laughlin, Minnesota, Mississippi, Louisiana. Where haven't you worked, Richard?
Well, I try and stay on the run.
That's for sure. You know, I saw a tweet that you put out about 2 weeks ago, and you were talking about Stu Unger, and you said you could only imagine what would have happened when you were at the Stardust and somebody like Stu Unger tried to make a wager and you guys capped them at $4.07. Some of these books are actually doing that now. Can you imagine Unger's reaction if you said, "Hey, Stewie, we'll give you $5?
I would still be running in spite of the fact that Stewie wasn't a particularly big person. He was quite small. He would still be chasing me, you know. It's just a very different business nowadays than back in the days of the bigger books.
You guys were willing to take action, though. I mean, that was the reputation of books like the Stardust and the Strat and the Riviera. Like, all of these books took all comers. Why do you think that has changed?
Well, first of all, we had people behind our counters that had been behind our counters at the Stardust. We made the line for the entire country, and we took huge bets and had huge action. When someone came into our property, we didn't want to have to send them someplace else. We wanted them to know and understand that they could get down for their action. And we were willing to fade it. That's a different model that's being used now. And what made our model work so well is we had people behind the counter that had been behind the counter around betting for a long time. So they knew when to move numbers. They knew how to manage the play. They knew oftentimes where the money was coming from. And they were just an experienced crew. You know, we were looking to maximize our handle. We were looking to maximize our long run brand. So when anybody landed in Vegas, and you know, we wanted them to come to our place and we wanted them to stay at our place. That was our goal. Now it's a different breed. Now you have people that are not managing risk in the old traditional sense, but kind of manipulating risk. And so what they do is we have very sophisticated systems now. You know, it's machine learning, it's computers, and they can figure out who the really sharp people are and who you have a very small edge against or a negative edge, and they can just eliminate them or at least minimize their activity. And they're also very good at finding those people that are less aware bettors, those that don't have a good track record, and they can then unleash the marketing vehicle on those people to get them more into action. So it's just a different bet. You know, we treated pretty much everyone that came in the door as a player, and we wanted to keep him as a player, and we had been around the business for a long time and felt we understood the risk and could manage him. The new people are just looking for to pick off the sharps and limit them, it seems, or some of the operators, and to make sure that when they find some softer play, to make sure that every time those teams that softer play likes, they're notified about it, and you know, their phones buzz and get in action, and they're offered bonuses. You know, it's a different model.
I think that's exactly right. I think you painted a very accurate picture. It's eliminating the smart players and sort of encouraging the ones that aren't as aware, and that's a problem. I mean, there are several problems.
That's exactly right.
There are several problems in this space, and I feel like, you know, I took this compliment in the highest regard the other day. Somebody said, Sam, you know what? You're like Batman with gambling. Like, you try and look out for everybody. And I said, that's a very nice compliment. I do feel like Batman. I don't have the mask, but I feel like I need to call some of this bullshit out. Richard, I cannot believe that a sports book can send you a push notification straight to your phone to tell you that you should make an 8-leg same game parlay. How is that possible? How can they do that?
Listen, they, you know, I was in the booking business. Most of these guys today are in the marketing business.
Back to sharp action for a second, because you guys saw a lot of it at the Stardust. I talked to a lot of sharp cats, you know, some of the guys like Matt Metcalf over at Circa and Ed Sammons at the Westgate, who was at the IP for a long time, and they tell me that they want to see the sharp action. They might limit the sharp better. They might only give them a nickel or a dime, but they don't want to kick that player out because they want to know who these guys like. I imagine that was in your playbook as well. You want to know who these guys are on, right?
We were, as a book, from the second we opened in the morning until the evening, we're collecting data, okay? And that may be weather, that may be injury reports, that may be what other people think, and that may be who's making bets on what. So when a guy that we know is a sharp bettor makes a laydown, that is incredibly valuable information to us. And so the last thing we were going to do is discourage him from helping us run our business.
Why do you think these sports betting stocks are all going way, way, way south?
Because they went way too far north. You know, it's kind of Newton's law of stock, you know. I mean, you know, I have sweat a P&L in sports betting, and I don't think people understand how tough the sports betting business is. You know, if we could hold 3 or 4 points in a month, especially the way we were dealing, I was thrilled. It's a tough business. I think a lot of people that are inexperienced in the business just thought it was very easy. You also saw a lot of these companies going into the States and saying, oh, that you're going to make this kind of money, you're going to make this kind of money. It's just going to be like you have, you're able to print money. And it's not like that. You know, and they published the handle statistics, but when you look at what's left over, and a lot of that's been inflated by, you know, the bonuses. You know, if you bet this, you get, we'll give you this free money that you can bet, and this, you know, some of the marketing inducements. But it's tough business. I just don't think they understood the business, you know, and they started listening to their own hype.
Yeah, and you're seeing what's happening with a brand like Wynn. You know, Wynn Bet, at one point, they thought they were worth $3 billion, and now the valuation is a lot lower. I remember at one point, Penn stock, this would have been around, oh, I don't know, March or April of 2020, Penn stock was like $4. And then it got all the way to 120, and it's cratered all the way back down. I think you're right. It got too hot. It went way too far north, and there's been big time regression with these stocks. And I don't know, Richard, you know, like these companies like DraftKings and FanDuel, they're valued at X, but they're not making X. How are these books making a profit right now with all the money they're spending on acquisition and marketing? And here's a free nickel to sign up, and here's $1,000 risk-free bet. They're just throwing money out the window right now. They can't be making a lot of money.
They're not. You know, I refer to it as the great cash incineration. You know, I mean, you look at the quarterly reports, and it's just all about cash burn. You know, these are what you call story stocks. And story stocks are when they have this great story, and they're going to go out there, and they're going to do all this aggressive marketing, and they're going to get this big market share, and they're going to keep it. Well, one, are they going to be able to get that big market share? And two, are they going to keep it? Are they going to be able to defend that share? And I think a lot of people are just looking at quarter after quarter after quarter, and it's just this big burn, and they're going, when's this going to stop? And all of a sudden they're thinking, you know, my money may not be in the best place, and that's what's happening. I mean, what has caused these stock values to fall is when there's more sellers than buyers, you know. I think the market's getting a lot smarter, and I think the stories in those storybook stocks are just losing their credibility.
I had a gentleman tell me he's been booking bets for about 30 years now. He said the two guys that are best for handle are Tom Brady and LeBron James. He said when those guys play, when they're on the field or on the court, people bet on them or against them. They're very polarizing figures, but they bring out the dollars. They're like magnets for the money. In your day, who were some of the guys or the teams that when you knew they were on the board, you were going to get that extra cabbage behind the counter?
Well, you know, we liked the coastal, the big rivalries, you know, and it was a little tougher booking at that time because people had to be in our book to bet. Now, I need to have a little caveat there. I'm not acting, some of your listeners may think, well, this guy's really naive. We had 11 payphones on the outside of our building, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And during this time, you couldn't have a phone in front of the boards because you couldn't transmit it, you know, information across state lines and stuff like that. We had 11 payphones on the outside of our building. Those were the 11 highest revenue producing payphones in the United States. So, you know, it may be suggested that there was information flowing to our book, to people standing outside of our book who would then run in the door and do something. Who knows? But, you know, it used to be kind of hard to book because we'd get out of balance. Because when a West Coast to big West Coast team was playing an East Coast team, the East Coast money doesn't show up until the flights start coming in, you know, late Thursday, early Friday, stuff like that. And so we would be out of balance and have to kind of hold the line trying to guess at what the East Coast money was going to bring us, you know. But we had different players. You know, in college basketball, we had some guys that really fired heavy at us, you know, and it just kind of depends. But the big football rivalries, especially if you go East Coast, West Coast, that's what got a lot of interest.
I've never told this story on this show, but your line about the payphones is so good. So I want to tell this story. I got to be really tight when I was covering pro sports in Chicago. I worked at WGN Radio from 2012 to 2018 before I moved out to Vegas. And I became very friendly with a guy that was behind the counter at a Vegas sports book. And I used to use the phone in the back booth at Wrigley Field to call him when the wind would turn. Because those guys, you know, those Wrigley Field totals are a motherfucker. You know, if that wind's going out, the total's 13. The wind's coming in, the total's 7. And there would be some days where the weather report would say the wind is going out, and then all of a sudden the wind would spin. And the forecast wouldn't have it, but the flags would be blowing toward home plate, and I'd be like, hey, man, the wind just took a turn for the in. And he'd go, oh, my God. And he'd lower the total a full run, and he'd book all that over money because nobody knew any better.
Yeah, no, and trust me, within game betting and stuff like that, that information is very, very important. You know, I mean, they talk about just the latency in a TV signal, you know. So, and that's kind of another curious in-game betting. You know, you can send in 4 bets and they approve 2 and don't approve 2. And they use the information on the 2 they didn't approve to move a number.
You have a money line price that says, you know, 4-1. And somebody tries to put the bet in. They try and bet a dime on 4-1. And then they don't take the bet. And then they'll drop the money line price to plus 285 or something
exactly.
Like that. Yeah, you're picking and choosing.
And that's the kind of thing that, you know, us old school guys, that doesn't impress us too much. you know, look, I understand they're out to make money. And, I mean, even in the old days, you know, a bookie knew who was dialing his phone back when they invented the first cell phones where you could see who was calling, and they would – you know, they would know what he was going to do oftentimes before they even picked up the phone, because players have habits. You know, they always like LSU or something like that, you know. And so he might shave a point, or he just may not take the call, you know, especially if he's already balanced. And, you know, he's ready to go watch the game and enjoy it without having to sweat it. But, you know, I'm not opposed to making money and stuff, but you know these guys are collecting data too, but they're collecting data sometimes in ways that I'm not comfortable with.
Sure. I really only have 2 more questions or 2 more topics I want to get to, Richard. Number 1 would be like your favorite character or 2. You know, every book's got a character guy or a couple characters that, you know, like Chris Andrews used to talk about Crying Kenny. The guy who shot the TV out at Del Mar when the game went over in triple overtime or something like that. Do you have a character or 2 that you'll never forget?
Well, yeah. I mean, the biggest character I had was Scott Shetler, who ran my book. You know, I was in charge of the casino at the startup, and Scott ran the book. And my main job was to stay between Scott and the gaming control board and Scott in the corporate office, you know, just let him book, you know, I handled all the rest of things, but one of the things, and this is just to all our bettors, you know, for the casino side, we'd have these really nice trips to the Super Bowl and we'd take them fishing and we had all these trips and Scott says, you never do anything for the book guys. And I said, you're right. And so one December we said, let's have a player appreciation party. And you know what the Stardust book used to look like. Everyone's got the same sweatsuit they've had on for the last week. And, you know, it's just this whole group of characters. Nobody knows who anybody's name is, but it's all nicknames, you know.
Knuckles. And, like Knuckles.
So we had this thing, and we really did it right. And we had shrimp there, and we had oysters, and just really did a nice spread for these guys. They couldn't believe it. And we did engraved invitations for them. They'd never seen anything. They put on their clean track suits, you know, and came in. And this one guy was scraping the oysters out of the oyster shells and then shining up the oyster shells and putting them in his pocket because he could take them home to his daughter because they were so pretty and he'd never seen anything like it. The other people were eating shrimp in such quantities that I was concerned they were going to die of mercury poison or something. And that was probably one of the funniest scenes I'd ever seen. And that you kind of had to understand the old Stardust book. But, you know, we had a lot of seats there and people hung out there because that's where the action was. And, you know, that's where it happened.
10 Italian guys in tracksuits pounding shrimp and oysters. There's an image.
Well, we had two. We had Gucci Circle, which was, I guess some of the people might argue they were old mob guys. I don't know. I didn't do background investigations of everybody that went in the door, but we gave you, they always wore these great Gucci shirts, and they were seniors. And I mean, slow walking seniors, some ad walkers. And I made sure they had coffee and some donuts in the morning. And for some reason, we had this field agent from the Nevada Gaming Control Board who didn't like this. You know, and he said, what are you letting these old mob guys in there? And I said, I don't know, they're mob guys, you know. He goes, well, I don't think you should have them in here. And I said, then put them in the black book. You know, I'm not going to go through here and throw everybody out you don't like. But it was a funny crew. You know, we had the Gucci Circle, and we just had a lot of different nicknames and a lot of interesting different groups.
My last question involves the time you spent in college. When you're going to school, going to class, but then you're working nights dealing cards and dealing dice. How did you pull that off, going to college and being a dealer?
Well, you know, I mean, I would go to work at 9 at night, get off at 5 in the morning, and then go into school during the day. And it was really not the only way I could afford to go to college. You know, I mean, the casinos paid good money and we made good tips. You know, I was working for Bill Harrah back then in the early 70s. And it allowed me to get my, you know, my master's and spend 5.5 years in a PhD program in economics. And I'll tell you, that was valuable experience because if you're going to be in the casino business, I think there's really value into understanding what the casino business is about. And, you know, I had good educational credentials, but I also understood the reality of what was going on in the building. And that was the player. And the mentality of the player and what the employees were being subjected to. And you know, it was a great experience. A great experience. I mean, the only problem was that there was just so much smoke in the buildings then, you know.
You go into class smelling like a pack of Marlboro Reds.
Yeah, let me tell you, I was tired a lot. You know, I was tired a lot. But you do what you have to do. And, you know, when you're 21 years of age.
Amen to that. Mm-hmm. That's Richard Schutz. Please follow our guy at Schutz Inc. on Twitter. Great stories, great anecdotes. I appreciate you joining me, sir. Thanks for your time, and let's do this again down the road, please.
My pleasure.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Richard Schutz for hopping on the program. 224, 231, and 8 down 5. And I got some golf plays here. We've got Colin Morikawa outright. Morikawa top 5. The Matsuyama top 10 is a wash because he withdrew. And then Chris Kirk top 10. He was about 8-1 to finish at the top of the board. Also Michigan to beat Indiana and the under of Northwestern and Iowa. Cash some tickets, make some money. We will talk to you next week. Early in the week, we'll start breaking down these college basketball games. We'll talk to you then right here on Chicken Dinner.